Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass. The only move that matters is your next one. Our guest today is Jenny Blake, author, career and business strategist, and speaker. She helps people organize their brains, move beyond burnout, and build sustainable, dynamic careers they love. Jenny is the author of Pivot, The Only Move That Matters Is Your Next One, and Life After College, which is based on her blog of the same name. In today's teleclass, Jenny Blake will show you how you can pivot with purpose into your next opportunity, no matter your age, life stage, bank account balance, or career level. Pivoting is a mindset and a skill set. Jenny's pivot method will resonate with anyone facing the question of what comes next. And first, a reminder. Today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email letting you know when the podcast is available. And now, Jenny Blake, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you so much, Karen, for having me and everybody who is here listening. When I talk to people about their careers, I often hear things like, I think I'm going crazy. I just don't know what's wrong with me. Am I asking for too much? I just can't do this anymore. I think I'm having a midlife crisis, or I think I'm having a quarter life crisis. Will I ever be happy? And it doesn't matter, as you said, Karen, it doesn't matter their age, stage, bank account balance. Many have perfect on paper jobs, but have hit a plateau and feel an inexplicable urge to do things differently. And I can relate. I pivoted many times in my career before I had this language for it. And every time it felt like a crisis. I left UCLA early to work at a startup company as the first employee, and it grew from 1 to 30 employees. When I hit a plateau there, the career conversation I regret the most is the one I never had, telling the founder I'd hit a pivot point and wanted more growth. And so instead, I started interviewing for Google in my car during lunch breaks. I got the job at Google, and sure enough, I was doing AdWords training and development. And sure enough, 2.5 years in, hit a plateau and thought that my only option was to leave. And meanwhile, I had been training over 1,000 people who were some of the best and the brightest coming into roles and hitting their own pivot points and asking me what they should do. I was able to pivot internally. I did coach training on nights and weekends. And so before I left Google, I pivoted internally to the coaching and career development team. And that's where I really got to roll up my sleeves and work on global coaching programs and manager training that would help everybody have more transparent career conversations. But even still, when my first book was coming out, after 5.5 years at Google, I made the tough decision not to return after a sabbatical. And I thought that was surely going to be the hardest career decision that I had to make, was not to go back to Google, to give up six-figure salary, bonus, 3 meals a day, yoga, you name it. I had the perfect on-paper job. And when I talked about leaving, people reacted like I was breaking up with Brad Pitt. You really think you can do better than Google? Who was I to think that I could make it on my own? But I had a gut feeling that it was now or never. You know, I joke, I wrote the book, my new book, Pivot, for people I call high net growth. These are people where money is important, but it's not everything. And when given the option, they will bootstrap a business, make a lateral move within their company or organization, or start their own business to feel like their needs for growth are being met and ultimately impact on their own lives, their families, their communities. And I call them impactors for short. So as impactors, we don't have FOMO. We have FONT, fear of not trying. And back in 2011, I knew that I would forever regret not trying to make it on my own. So I left, and I rode the adrenaline of that for about 1.5 years. And then, sure enough, 2013 came around, and I'd become known as the girl who left things, the girl who left college, the girl who left Google. But what did I stand for? What was ahead of me on this road? What could I create a movement around? How could I help people in their own lives and careers? And so once again, I was grappling with this question, what's next? This time without a steady paycheck to fund that exploration. And so as my bank account balance dwindled, I got more and more anxious and concerned. It got to the point where I didn't know how I was going to pay rent in 2 weeks. And this was as recently as January 2014. And I just thought, am I being delusional? Am I not cut out for entrepreneurship? What's wrong with me? And it was really hard not to take my pivot and pivot points personally. I came to one of two conclusions. One, there is either something very wrong with me and I'm destined to be unhappy for the rest of my life in my career. If I couldn't be happy at Google and now even running my own business, I was hitting another pivot point. What's wrong with me? Or my second conclusion was that maybe, just maybe, this feeling of a midlife or quarter life crisis is going to be hitting us all more frequently than it ever has in the past. That given the pace of change and innovation in our economy, we're all going to be having to ask and answer what's next much more frequently than in years past. And as they say in my book, if change is the only constant, then let's get better at it. And as I started to interview people for the book, I recognized that it was really the latter that proved to be true. That nobody, almost everybody I talked to was either entering a pivot or coming out of one. That in fact, the big secret is that we're all pivoting more often than not. And this is not about quitting a job or a business at the first sign of displeasure. It's not about becoming reckless job hoppers, but it's also not about shaming and blaming ourselves if we're looking for more meaning and impact in our work. Millennials get a bad rap for this, but it affects people of all ages. And instead of proactively solving that and saying, you know what, it's really smart if you want more meaning and impact in your life, we tend to internalize it. And we say, there's something wrong with me. I should be happy. What's wrong with me? But actually, this call for more growth and meaning and impact is a good sign. This is the doorway to opportunity. And if we can learn to not just sit with that uncertainty and not take our pivots personally, but actually apply a method to unpacking our next move, then the pivot points don't have to be so jarring. They don't have to be so sharp. And that's really what I've unpacked in my book, Pivot. It's a four-stage method for mapping your next move. And this is, it's both a mindset and a skill set. The more that we practice this, the better we can get. So a lot of this teleclass will be focused on the method, and I encourage you to hit pause while you're listening and journal. Take a pen and paper and write things down. And I know some of you may be listening while cooking or walking or running or driving, but take the time to really reflect for yourself, because it's easy to, and I know I love listening to podcasts, it's easy to listen to someone else talk and think, well, I could never do that, or they have something I don't. But the truth is, and what makes it a pivot and not a 180, is that everything you need is already right under your feet. Typically, when startups talk about pivoting, it's plan B. Plan A has failed, and now they need to pivot to save the business. So Twitter used to be a podcasting service. YouTube used to be a video dating site. But when it comes to our careers, pivot is really the new normal. And I have to say, from the time I started interviewing people for the book to the time I went to fact check a year and a half later, almost every single person had changed, some by choice and some by circumstance. And so this is really happening much more frequently than you might realize. And so if you're at a pivot point or a plateau, how do you know? Well, it starts as a general feeling of maybe a little boredom or dissatisfaction or a whisper in your gut that says, it's time for more. And if we don't pay attention, we start to go into decline where our bodies are actively fighting back, and or not even fighting back, but they're trying to get our attention. So signs of burnout, migraines at work. I had a friend who would get panic attacks every time she got off the subway on her way to work. These are signs that it's time to pivot. And while pivots do involve some amount of risk and uncertainty, they are not 180s. If I had quit Google to become a full-time yoga teacher, that would have been a 180. Instead, I was doing coaching and career development at Google, and I pivoted to do coaching and career development on my own. And I'll say that by following and reverse engineering my successful changes and interviewing dozens of other people, and applying what I'm now going to teach you in the pivot method, I was able to triple my income that year that I didn't know how I was going to pay the rent. And in fact, it became the most profitable year in my business. So the number one thing, the number one mistake most people make is they focus too much on what they don't want, what's not working, and what they don't yet have. And that was certainly my mistake too. Instead, think like a basketball player. A basketball player has one foot firmly rooted in the ground. That's their foundation when they stop dribbling, and then they can scan for opportunity with their pivot foot. So the stage one of the pivot method, let's get into this. Stage one is called plant, and there are two parts to it. One is, what are your current strengths? What are you most interested in? When do you feel the most in the zone? What experience do you already have? Who do you already know? This is all about your existing assets, so you can really ground down from a rooted place of stability of what's already working and what you already know. The other part of plant is one-year vision. And I call this in the book, put a pin in it. Just like in Google Maps, when you put a pin in your desired destination, it's important when pivoting to understand, well, what does success look like 1 year from now? You may not know with exact specificity. If you did, you would be doing it. But you can say, well, how do I want to feel a year from now? What general environment excites me most? What do I want to become an expert at? What kind of impact do I want to be making? If someone were to give me an award or write me a glowing thank you note a year from now, what would it be for? And so you can start to fill in your known variables. And now from the plan stage, we have your starting point, where you are now, and where you want to be a year from now. I think the five-year question is totally obsolete at this point. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? How can we possibly know? Things are changing far too quickly for that. If you happen to have a vision that's 2 or 3 years out, something like you're attending graduate school and you know when you're going to be finishing, that's great, but it's not necessary. And it's kind of why it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but the subtitle of the book, The Only Move That Matters Is Your Next One. Once you do pivot and have this one-year vision, you can always continue from there. So the plant stage, strengths and what's already working and what do you want a year from now? Now this brackets our pivot from where you are now and where you would like to end up. The next stage is scan. This is like looking around the basketball court for passing options. Scanning is about three things: people, skills, and projects. Who do you already know that you can connect with? Who do you admire? Who would be exciting to reach out to? Who can you learn from afar? Even if you never speak to them in person, things like going to the conference, podcasts, books. Who do you admire and could you learn from just even by observation? The next piece of scanning is skills. Typically, when we want to pivot, it would be beneficial to learn or grow in some new way. And that's, as high net growth individuals, that's exciting to us. So think about, what do you want to learn in a coming year? I often talk about career. Think of your career like a smartphone, not a ladder. It's not a linear thing anymore. Instead, your education and your upbringing are your out-of-the-box model, and it's up to you to download apps for different skills, interests, and experiences that are exciting to you. So what skill apps do you want to download in the coming year? For me, it was doing coach training on nights and weekends. Another app, you could have personal skills like cooking lessons or dance classes, anything that's going to round out your career portfolio and bring you greater fulfillment. And skills building can be small, taking one online class, or it could be more long-term, like going to graduate school or getting an advanced degree. And then the third element of scanning is starting to scan for projects that sound exciting to you. Again, taking the pressure off of having to jump up one huge rung of the ladder at a time and having to plan your most perfect next move. Instead, just start to connect the dots between what you identify in your plant stage and the scan and say, well, what hypotheses do I have? That then brings us into piloting. So the third stage of the pivot method is pilot, and this is like passing the ball around the court, looking for where you have the best place to make a shot. Piloting is about small experiments. Take the pressure off of having to know right up front. A good pilot will help you assess the three E's. One, do I enjoy this new area? Two, can I become an expert at it, and do I want to? And three, is there room to expand in the market, either within your current team at work or within the company or within your business if you're self-employed? So for example, when I was at Google and I was on the AdWords product training team, I knew I loved being in front of the room, and I also knew that I loved this coach training thing that I was doing on nights and weekends, but I didn't know how it would apply. I did have a passion for making drop-in coaching at Google as easy to sign up for as a massage, not just for executives and people in leadership programs, but everybody in the company. And it turned out there were a couple other people interested in this. So I joined a small task force with 10% of my time. And we, you know, you hear about this a lot at Google, 20% projects. Well, a lot of them start as 10% in addition to our 100% core job. So it's not like you even have to ask permission to let anything go. You kind of take on a passion project. And there was not a career development team at that time, but I started on this 10% project, and it grew and grew. And when a career development team was formed, I was perfectly positioned to take the role. And that's not something I could have planned for up front. You can think of career pilots as what could you do in 10% of your time to move the needle or help you test the three E's that's low key. At Google, we had a phrase, launch and iterate, or get scrappy. And what that meant was don't wait until you have the perfect conditions or the perfect budget or the perfect time available. I wrote this book, Pivot. It took 3 years from start to finish. And people have asked, well, how did you do that? And I wrote my first book while working full time. And so much of it got done with sometimes 15 minutes a day, maximum an hour. I'm not the type that could go to some writer's retreat and so romantically write all day. That's not in my skill set, nor did I have the ability because I was working full time or running my business. And so I was really shocked actually at how much got done in those little increments of time. Think about for you, what could you do in 10% of your time each week? Maybe that's setting up friendtor calls with people who are friends but can provide domain area expertise or brainstorming. You could collaborate together. Maybe it's about attending one kind of industry, and I know everyone hates the word networking, but one kind of networking type opportunity a week. Maybe it's starting one tiny project or doing just a little bit of writing, or my podcast is another example. It's called Pivot Podcast. And the pilot there was that I started interviewing people with my iPhone headphones, and I would upload the files to SoundCloud. And I would even say, I don't have any fancy intro music, but I think you'll benefit from this conversation. And I did that for a year before I took the Podcast Pro and actually got it into iTunes. And so my skill building there, I taught myself GarageBand. I downloaded intro and outro music. I figured out how to edit them. And it's been an incremental improvement along the way. But that pilot really taught me how much I love conversations with people. Every guest I've had on the Pivot Podcast is someone who, it's like my author heroes have come to life, and it's so joyful for me. I had no clue when I started with those SoundCloud recordings how much I was going to truly love having those conversations. And so even now, as you're listening to this, I don't know exactly what it will become, but I know that it has a magnetic pull for me. I love metaphors. So another way to think of piloting is racehorses at the starting gate of the Kentucky Derby. You don't know exactly which one's going to pull ahead, but you set them all up so that you can see which one naturally picks up the most momentum. You can repeat Plant Scan Pilot over and over for months, if not years, and be perfectly happy. But every now and then, it's time for a launch, and that's the fourth stage of the Pivot Method. So a launch is when you've reduced risk enough, and you still, though, have some remaining uncertainty, but you're ready to go all in on your new direction. So a launch might be changing teams at work, changing industries, launching your own business, launching a new product or service to your existing customers. This is the moment where you say, publicly, I'm doing this. And again, I believe that a pivot mindset and applying the pivot method, you can do that for any project you get stuck on. You can even do this within your current role. Pivots don't always have to be drastic career changes. But when a launch is required, you'll know that by following the Plant Scan Pilot process, you'll be as prepared as possible. And I will also say that when pilots don't work, it's often the case that they're not, or even pivots as a whole, they don't pan out. Usually it's because someone has pivoted too sharply away from their current base. And so it's very natural to want to skip the plant stage, but I encourage you to actually spend the most time there. Even though it feels a little fuzzy, strengths and interests and one-year vision, that's what's going to give the most fuel for your fire. That's what, when you're clearer on that, you will so much more efficiently and effectively be able to scan for opportunity and then set up really resonant pilots. One of my favorite quotes is from poet David White. He says, "That which you can plan is too small for you to live." That which you can plan is too small for you to live. And I encourage you to keep that in mind as you plan your pivot and you plan any next moves, that while we love a sense of certainty and having a plan, we also, how often has life completely surprised you with something even bigger and more exciting than you could have imagined or even planned for? So part of pivoting and having a pivot mindset is embracing fear, insecurity, and uncertainty as the doorways of opportunity. and saying that when you have those things present, you know that you're onto something. You know that you are challenging yourself. And as Joseph Campbell would say, it's the rapture of being alive. So I wish you all well as you plan your next move. And again, you can do this once a year if you wanted to. You can do it on projects. You can do this for bigger career moves. But the biggest thing to remember is to focus on what's already working, and that a real pivot is doubling down on that to shift methodically in a new direction. So we'll open it up for a few questions now. And if you want to learn more, visit pivotmethod.com. There's a whole toolkit and the podcast and a coaching if you want more one-on-one support. So lots of additional resources to help you plan your next move.
Great. Well, we have a lot of questions, and I'm looking at my notes here. I have written in large letters the four steps: plant, scan, pilot, and launch, and I will be studying them in the next in the next days. I want to ask you, first of all, about we have a lot of questions about the difference between burnout and pivoting. And how do you recognize when you've reached a pivot point? And is pivoting a way of averting burnout?
This is a great question. And the, it's kind of making me think of a rectangle and a square. Like if you're hitting, is that one fits in the other, but the other doesn't always have to fit. So let's talk this through. Certainly, I actually, so a lot of times I think high net growth individuals hit pivot points as a product of their success, that they haven't failed. They've actually succeeded at a certain path or direction. And so they hit a point of boredom. The burnout can sometimes come as well as a product of success, which is that I'm so good at my job, or I care so much about my work, or I'm really trying to do well that I'm overworking and I'm not taking care of myself in the process. And burnout can happen even when somebody is incredibly passionate and happy with their job and may have no desire to pivot into a different opportunity, but they do need to kind of heed some of their body practices. Other times, however, feelings of burnout are a sign that someone's no longer working in their zone of genius, as Gay Hendricks would call it, that maybe, you know, in some cases we hit burnout because the work is really no longer a fit. And this is where having meditation or mindfulness practices can be really beneficial to start to discern the difference between the two. Either way, to prime yourself to pivot most effectively, it's so critical to really build in extra time for rest, recharging, physical exercise, sleep, eating well, that by getting your body foundation really well set first, you'll have so much more mental capacity and creativity to plan your pivot.
Okay, thank you. We also have questions about what you mean by a high net growth individual versus a high net worth individual. Can you talk a little more about this?
People who are high net worth, and many people will end up wealthy in both, as I would say, but people who are high net worth have accumulated a lot of financial assets in their lifetime. And so we say, okay, these are high net worth individuals. Those who are high net growth, they do care about money. They don't want to be starving artists, but money is not everything. And they will gladly take a pay cut or move horizontally if it means furthering their growth. So for someone who's high net growth, boredom is death, or the feeling of being stagnant or stuck, they just can barely tolerate it. And these are also people who you're not likely to find in jobs just for the money. They really want a sense of meaning or purpose. And of course, everyone will do what's needed if you really are strapped and have to pay the bills. But when given the choice, they really seek work that has meaning and impact. And in doing that, they often end up financially successful, and they seek to make sure that they can be. But so for someone who's high net growth, it's really where their primary motivation and source of fulfillment comes from.
Okay, that makes sense. You also talk about decision fatigue in your book. How do people reduce that when they're making major decisions?
Studies show that we have a finite amount of willpower, and that includes our ability to make decisions throughout the day. So if we have gone throughout the day, by the end of the day, we'll be less likely to resist buying last-minute items near the checkout stand, or if you've done a really long grocery shop that night and you've been comparing prices all night, you're more likely to kind of cave at the checkout station. And that's true for people who are lower income, because they're debating what to buy and looking at prices throughout their shop experience. So that these studies show you end up having something called decision fatigue or ego depletion. Well, the same thing happens when we're at a pivot point because we're asking these huge questions of ourselves. What do I want? What's next? How can I afford it? You know, how will I financially make this move? And so we simply have fewer overall cognitive resources than we might otherwise. And so one thing that's really beneficial when pivoting is have as many systems and routines as you're able that can help reduce some decision fatigue in other areas of your life, like plan your meals in advance or use a meal delivery service for a little while or hire a trainer at the gym so that you just know that you're accountable for or sign up for recurring fitness classes, have a weekly walk with a friend. Do things that don't require a decision. They're just kind of built into your schedule to support you so that you can free up more of that energy for asking and answering these bigger questions.
Got it. Now, here's a question about what do you mean when you talk about the need for having a Silicon Valley mindset?
This is really about being open to change. And Nassim Taleb wrote a book called Anti-Fragile, Things That Gain from Disorder. And so whether, you know, a Silicon Valley mindset is a little bit of this, I mean, that's really more about just being open to new technology and to change and collaboration. I would say that's the Silicon Valley piece. But in Taleb's book, Anti-Fragile, it's about things that don't just withstand setbacks, they grow stronger because of them. He invokes Hydra, the Greek myth of Hydra, that every time mm-hmm. Hydra has one head get cut off, two grow back in its place. And so we can also reframe change and even uncertainty and setbacks as things that not only do we make it through, but they make us stronger. And if you look at yourself like you're the main character in a movie, you can ask, why is this happening for me right now at this exact time in this exact way? What am I meant to learn? And if we're all sitting in the audience with our popcorn watching you, the main character, up on the movie screen, what are we rooting for? And that can be a fun way. And I didn't make this exercise up. There are studies that show it's very effective for brainstorming why, you know, whatever challenges you're facing currently, of what you're meant to gain from them and learn and grow and even do differently.
Got it. Now, everybody's heard about mentors, but you talk about the concept of friend-tors in Pivot. Can you tell us more about what you mean by this and why they're so important?
I have gotten so much value out of setting up mastermind groups and accountability with friends who have similar goals. I think sometimes in the career space, we feel pressure to find a mentor, and it can be this really intimidating thing. Well, nowadays, you can learn so much from people from afar, and then with friend-tors, it's actually very mutually beneficial. So it's not to discourage having mentors. I mean, mentors have been so wonderful to me throughout my career, and it's an amazing cycle of giving and receiving. But don't discount the value of saying to a friend, hey, want to have a weekly call where we check in and talk about what worked and what didn't and what we're going to focus on the following week. Or I have one friend or we do email accountability threads. And when times are really busy or we have something important and we email once a day with what we're going to get done the next day and what we got done that previous day. So there are all kinds of creative ways that you can set up friend-tor situations where it's mutually beneficial for both of you. And I also like doing what I call 30-30 calls, which is let's brainstorm 30 minutes for a challenge I'm facing and then 30 minutes for you. And I just think that's so much more effective than writing to someone and saying, can I pick your brain for 60 minutes? That's not going to feel good to anyone on the receiving end, most likely. But if you can set up 30-30s with people in a similar space, you can get so much mutual value from that.
Great. Well, we have time for one more question, and that is, how do you think our listeners can take what you're saying to become more discoverable, as you say in the book, so that opportunities can find them rather than the other way around?
The biggest factor is for discoverability. So I use the analogy of Bluetooth devices, that you have to make both devices discoverable in order to pair and connect up. So this relates to finding jobs, clients, even friend-tors. And so how to become more discoverable? The biggest three factors are results, reputation, and platform. Results. are you good at what you do? Can you get results for people? And what is your ninja skill set or your superpowers that people tend to come to you for advice or help with? And for me, one of them, strangely enough, is making spreadsheets. Who knew? You know, like my art is organizing complex things in very linear or spreadsheet type ways. So I had a marketing spreadsheet for authors that's been downloaded 7,000 times. And that's a really weird thing. I would have never identified that. So you can kind of look at, well, what is naturally getting momentum on its own? Reputation is then, do people know about it? So either within your company or if you're self-employed, it's then starting to get word of mouth working for you and being part of more visible events or organizations or even being on podcasts or starting your own podcast. I mean, nowadays there are so many options for how to build a strong reputation as an expert in your field. And then platform, that's about really expanding the reputation piece into your own corner of the world. And I know that not everybody wants to be a content creator and have a blog and a podcast and an Instagram account and all the social media. But what is your way that you want to contribute? Now there are sites like Medium or even posting on LinkedIn. And again, even if writing with words isn't your thing, you can do so much with photos or with audio. But how can you add value in the world where you're expressing yourself and allowing your people to find you?
That's great. And that is all we have time for today. Our thanks to Jenny Blake. The book is Pivot. The only move that matters is your next one. Our thanks to Jenny, and you can find her at jennyblake.me and at her Pivot podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen, and huge thanks to everybody here listening.